From 1975 to 1990, Lebanon witnessed a war so brutal that it left the country broken, bloodied, and scarred. The Lebanese Civil War was a 15-year-long dark period in the history of the country that resulted in at least 250,000 deaths and the disappearance of approximately 17,000 civilians. A photographer from Lebanon, Rola Khayat, grew up during the 1980s, when the Civil War was at its peak. Her childhood memories are singed with experiences of the war. Reporter Radhika Iyengar speaks to Rola as she rummages through her memory to narrate what it was like growing up during the war. It's a cold, sunless winter morning, and I meet Rola at her studio in Upper West Side, New York. It's a small space with white walls, prints, and a corner with a shelf filled with books with titles such as Geography and Memory and Frames of War. Taped to the walls, among the photographs she has made, are black and white scanned prints of drawings Rola had made when she was 6 years old. Rola's mother made enormous efforts in shielding her children from the war. The drawing hour was one of the efforts.
We had an hour in the day which was considered drawing time. And my mother would sit us down, give us blank pieces of paper and crayons, and she would say, you know, now is an hour to be creative, and so we had to draw. And at the end of it, she would assess our creativity. But actually, the real reason why she did that was she studied child development and wanted to see whether we were being disturbed by the war.
And among those drawings, there were a few odd ones,
such as drawings of fighter jets, and also another one of a Lebanese army man on a tank. And on the tank, there's blood splattered all over it. And the army man is smiling, and the sun shining down on him, and even the sun is smiling. So that was kind of, that was drawn by my brother. And I guess it was wishful thinking that the Lebanese army is going to win the war, and that this is going to be like the end of the war, basically.
When the day collapsed into night, the children were afraid to sleep, afraid of being in the dark.
We always wanted to have some source of light coming in.
The hallway was the safest place in the house, as there weren't any windows that could shatter. At night, when Rola would be sleeping with her siblings, the night wouldn't be filled with the calming shrill of cicadas, nor would it be covered with a blanket of stars. Instead, across its dark belly, bombs would glow in the distance. The night would be punctuated with piercing sounds of Kalashnikovs.
So there's the sound of AK-47s. Those were the guns that were mainly used in the Lebanese Civil War. So you would hear rapid gunfire, and also you would hear fighter jets, bombs falling from fighter jets. So it was an orchestra of really unpleasant sounds.
And Rola would have nightmares that would spill into her reality. There was this one time when...
And I remember one moment, actually. I was sleeping over at my cousin's house. And it was me, my sister, my cousin, who was our age. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I started to panic because everyone else was sleeping peacefully around me. So I tried to wake up my sister. We were like, I think, 6 or 7 at the time, and she just wouldn't wake up. My cousin wouldn't wake up, and then I was just sitting there in the big dark room all alone with the sounds terrifying me. So I started bursting out crying until the adults came in and calmed me down.
As a child then, how would you feel?
You feel vulnerable, you feel exposed, there's nothing, there's no sort of background noise to convince you that the war isn't happening.
War is the most disorienting phenomena. Imagine growing up in a landscape punctuated by the cacophony of deafening bombs, the nerve-wracking staccato of guns, and the whirring sound of military tanks. As a child, how does one register that? How does one internalize and cope with it?
Whenever we would get scared, we would build imaginary worlds that we inhabited. I remember we had a very close relationship with our cousins, and so we used to hang out with them all the time and play together, and we used to create those imaginary worlds. Like we built tents on the balcony of our house, And each tent was a different world, and we would go inside and have our own, you know, make-believe, fictional world that was happening.
It was a cocoon that helped them momentarily escape reality and live in a fantastical world filled with cartoon characters like Asterix and Obelix and the Smurfs. But reality was inescapable. It followed them like a dark, lingering shadow, particularly on their way to school.
There were notorious traffic jams that lasted for hours and hours. That's something we also got used to, so we would come up with games to play in the car, like I Spy with My Little Eye, or many other games like playing XO or reading or drawing or listening to music. I mean, we got used to having really, really long rides to school and back or anywhere else we were going. The roads were in horrible condition. There were potholes everywhere. It was in the summertime, so the heat was unbearable. Many of the cars didn't have air conditioning. Many of the cars were breaking down because of the heat, because there was no, you know, maintenance for the cars that was happening. And during the war, so you would see sights of, you know, cars just stopped in the middle of the road, others that are just heating up. You would have people with like shattered glass who've taped it up with just, you know, plastic bags, or it was very chaotic. There were also checkpoints every stretch of the way. And the checkpoints were basically made of, you know, sandbags piled over each other. And you had like four or five militiamen with AK-47s hanging off their shoulders. And if it was at night, they'd have a flashlight in their hand, which they'd shine into the car and ask, you know, who are you? Give me your passport. And they would check what your name is, what your religion is. They would check your trunk. They would check your car for whatever suspicious things. It was just a series of harassments. And if you didn't have any connections with, let's say, parliament members or politicians, then they would pull you aside, ask you many questions. Many of them just wanted to be bribed. You could bribe them off and they would let you pass.
But Rola's car was never pulled aside.
We had a former militiaman driver who used to take us to school and back. He used to belong to the Amal militia. So he knew many of the people who were on the worked in the checkpoints that would stop us on the way to school. And that guaranteed us safe passage going to school and coming back.
And they had a secret password.
Also, my uncle knew a member of parliament called Hussein al-Husseini, and so I remember every time we would be stopped at a checkpoint and the militiaman would be looking into the window with his flashlight sort of burning our eyeballs, and our driver would say, "Min ibal Hussein al-Husseini," which means we're here with the permission of Hussein al-Husseini, and then they would let us go.
And their reality influenced the games they played.
I guess we saw war as a sort of a theater, as a play, and it came out in our drawings and also in the games that we used to play. We actually built a checkpoint outside our house using just bricks, and it looked pretty much like the real checkpoints that we would see in the streets. And we were a gang of, like, I think 7 to 8, my siblings and my cousins. The youngest was like 4 years old, all the way up to like 11 or 12 or even 13. So yeah, there were some young adults with us, and we would stop the cars that were passing by the road, and we would ask them for their hawiya, which in Arabic means their passport. And surprisingly, the people who we would stop were playing along, and they didn't even make it seem like we were not an authority. We actually felt we had the power, you know, to stop them.
While the children played games, Rola's mother spun stories to protect them.
When the shelling was really bad, my mom would put us in the bathroom and lock the door and say that it's raining really hard, and she didn't want, you know, us to be harmed by the thunder and lightning. So we we kind of wondered, you know, I mean, why is she so afraid of rain? But we never really questioned it.
Did you ever believe her that it was actually raining really badly outside?
No, or? I mean, maybe, no, I guess we didn't because it probably wasn't even raining. But we maybe wanted to believe it. We just hung out in the bathroom.
Once, however, the bullets began raining down on them when they were stuck in a crossfire.
Me and my twin sister were with my mother in Hamra, which is in West Beirut. And she was taking us to the dentist. And then all of a sudden, there was like an outbreak of shooting. And we were pretty much stranded in the middle of the street. And my mom was panicking. And then a lady stuck her head out from the fifth floor and was telling my mother, you know, come up, stay here until the fighting dies down. And I remember thinking, what an awkward situation. I mean, that's when I felt, you know, that there was something dangerous happening.
In Beirut, there was a scarcity of things. Every household hoarded things for emergency.
There were multiples of everything. So what I mean is like jerry cans that we would use to fill with water, and blowout candles and matches and kerosene lamps. And also going to bed, there was always a candle next to our bed because the electricity cuts were very frequent. I mean, electricity was pretty much a scarcity.
And food was scarce. During the war, not many people left their homes. But when they did, it was to get bread from the bakery nearby.
The long lines that were seen in front of bakeries was during the siege of Beirut, so no food was being let into Beirut, and the siege was put there by the Israeli army. One sort of stable source of food was bread that was accessible in bakeries, and people would leave their houses to get bread, and bread became sort of equivalent to survival. And there's an expression in Arabic, you know, that bread is life.
But bread became a reason for countless deaths. The areas outside the bakeries became sniper zones, where civilians would be targeted and killed.
Because people were lined up like sitting ducks.
But the people continued to struggle to live their lives, regardless of what was happening around them. Looking back, Rola describes them as fearless.
I don't know, there's something that war does to a person. When you're in the middle of it, you don't feel that sense of fear that you feel when you're maybe watching it from a distance or hearing about it in the news. But when you're thrown into the midst of it, you become resilient in a way.
The civil war ended in 1990. By that time, the country had been cut wide open and torn apart. Thousands had gone missing. Thousands had been killed. But children like Rola, who grew up during this dark phase, emerged wondering, what was their Lebanon like before the war? Find out in our next episode as we speak to a handful of Lebanese Jews living in New York who left Lebanon at the start of the Civil War. Radhika Iyengar for Columbia Radio News.